Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
All right, Jake, let's fire this puppy up, man. You in charge down there? What's going on? Why are we just sitting around? There we go.
On cue. Oh,
I hope you're ready, Amy Scott. Are you ready? All right.
Good. Oh, I'm ready.
All right, good. Hey, everybody, I'm Connor Rizdahl. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, where we make the day make sense. Now that we're ready,
I am Amy Scott, sitting in for Kimberly Adams today. Thanks for joining us on this Monday. We're going to do the usual news fix and then share a couple of Make Me Smiles and get out of your way. So, Kai, you have something.
We shall do that.
Something to share.
So, two things. One of which is a pet peeve, and then the other of which is substantive. And I guess I'll go with substantive first because honestly, it's a big deal. We know that the Europeans have been having big natural gas problems. We know that the Russians shut down Nord Stream 1, the big pipeline, for the last 10 days for maintenance. That's in air quotes. And we also know that the Europeans are trying to get everybody in the European Union, which is to say 27 different countries, on board with cutting 15% of their natural gas use because they want to wean themselves off Russian natural gas, which is a challenge. Anyway, Russia said today Gazprom, which is the Russian sort of state-owned gas and petroleum conglomerate, said today it's going to cut flows of natural gas to Europe to 20% of capacity. And that's just bad news, man. It's going to start getting cold in Europe really soon, forgetting about global warming and the heat wave they're having. But it's really bad. It's really going to be tough. And so I think we ought to keep an eye out for that as we start thinking and worrying about a recession in Europe, you know? I mean, I just think that's what it comes down to, you know? So anyway.
That's scary.
So that's my substantive thing. Oh, it is scary. I mean, imagine if you had to use 15% less of something that's really critical to your day-to-day functioning, whether you're a business or a person, and you had to cut 15% like tomorrow. And then not only did you have to cut 15% like tomorrow, but then you only get 1/5 of what you're supposed to get to begin with. It's just, it's really hard. It's really, really hard. And you sort of have to feel for the Europeans while at the same time acknowledging that they did get themselves into this jam by buying Russian petroleum.
And it's a hard one to get out of.
Exactly. So there's that. Number two, and a pet peeve. So everybody's talking about recession. About which a couple of things. Number one, we're not in recession. Number two, and most substantively, well, let me back up for a minute. We're going to get second quarter gross domestic product, our first reading of it, on Thursday morning at 8:30 Washington time. And it's going to be a negative number. That is to say, the economy will have shrunk in the second quarter. And that will be adding on to the first quarter of negative economic growth, which was negative 1.6%. Maybe it was negative 1.5. I forget. So that will be two consecutive quarters of negative economic growth. Okay?
Yep.
And everybody's going to go, oh, my God, we're in recession. And we're really not going to be in a recession because, well, for a couple of reasons. Number one is you cannot be in a recession if you're adding jobs, and we're adding 400,000 jobs a month. And you cannot be in a recession if consumers are spending to beat the band like we are doing and all of those things that you've been hearing on Marketplace and elsewhere for a number of weeks now. But there are people who will say, oh, look, the technical definition of a recession is two consecutive quarters of negative economic growth, and ta-da, we're in a recession. So, number one, that's not true. Number two, the people who get to decide whether we're in a recession or not is a group called the Business Cycle Dating Committee of the National Bureau of Economic Research. And they have 7 or 8 economists who look at a bunch of things, jobs and industrial production and wages. They look at all kinds of things, including GDP, but not solely limited to GDP, to determine whether or not we're in a recession. And it's always backward looking, right? You never know you're in a recession the minute it starts. And they weigh a bunch of factors. So that's the context for what I'm about to say. There's been a lot of reporting in the last like 48 hours of people saying that the media and the Biden administration are trying to change the way we define recessions in this economy. And that, to be polite, is baloney. If this were a Friday, I'd swear, but I can't swear on this podcast because Bridget yells at me.
Only on Fridays.
That's just not true. That's right. Only on Fridays with a beer in me. So look, here's the deal. Number one, the Biden administration is not redefining what it means to be in a recession. And number two, neither is the media. And if you are one of those who says, oh my God, this is a brand new thing that the National Bureau of Economic Research gets to decide and the media has just happened upon it because they're trying to prop up the Biden administration, I direct you to a tweet from Neil Irwin, formerly of the New York Times, now at Axios. And Neil pulled out a piece today from January the 8th, 1982, the first sentence of which is, the National Bureau of Economic Research, the arbiter of the nation's business cycles, declared yesterday that the current recession began last July. So that's in 1982. So we've been doing this for at least 40 years. So anybody who's on the bandwagon of the media is trying to prop up the Biden administration on this recession thing, you can go pound sand. That's all I got. That's a fairly vehement Monday rant, actually. Sorry. Yes, go ahead.
If one had just, you know, maybe missed a couple of Marketplace episodes recently while reporting. Where did this idea that a recession is technically defined as two consecutive quarters of negative economic GDP, negative GDP growth,
negative
where did that
growth,
come
yeah.
from? Why are people so
That's a great question. We've actually had some producers making the calls, and we can't actually track it down. And it has become sort of just a rule of thumb, an old wives' tale, take your pick on folklore or whatever. But that's sort of become the measurement, right? If you have sustained negative economic growth, which, by the way, is just a stupid expression, negative economic growth, how about just
right,
shrinking
I know,
economy?
Can't we just say shrinkage?
So, right. So, two sustained quarters, which is 6 months, right? It's a long time. Mm-hmm. But that's not the actual definition. It's too simple. It's too time frame bound. And it's not really as comprehensive as it needs to be. But I don't know exactly where it came from. I don't.
Well, dear listener, when we find out, we will make you smart about it because
yes.
I'm curious.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I know this is your pet peeve, though, because I follow you on Twitter, as everyone should.
Kills me.
I'm glad you're talking about it.
Yes. Thank you.
So mine is sort of energy related as well, to go back to your first fix. So last week when the UK was experiencing that record heat wave, mm-hmm. I learned today, reading a piece in Bloomberg, that parts of London came very close to a blackout, which is terrifying during the hottest temperatures on record. So I read this piece by Javier Blas. He's an energy columnist at Bloomberg. And he said that on July 20th, which was the day after Britain's hottest day ever, the combination of a surge in demand for electricity and a bottleneck in the grid left the eastern part of London short on power for a brief spell. And that a blackout was only averted because the power authorities paid a record high price for Belgium to send electricity across the English Channel. And that price was almost £10,000 per megawatt hour, which is more than $11,000. And just for context, because that is sort of a meaningless number, that's more than 5,000% higher than the normal price.
Yeah.
And it was just for a short time. Prices came back down, but for a while they were paying, you know, much higher than normal prices. And basically the takeaway is that years of underinvestment in the power grids all over the industrialized world have left us very vulnerable to these kinds of disruptions. And when demand for energy is way up during extreme heat, a failure could be really catastrophic. And this is interesting, the shift to electric vehicles, which really needs to happen to reduce carbon emissions, and what's causing, you know, these extreme heat waves is going to put even more pressure on the grid.
Yeah.
So I didn't realize how close they were to that, and glad they averted it. But it's pretty scary given our own aging power grid here in the U.S.
Well, those rolling blackout things are weird, man. I remember in 2001 when I was down in L.A. to interview for the Marketplace job. And I was at a mall in Santa Monica killing some time before I went in on the overnight shift. And this was in the days of rolling blackouts in the California power grid because we were going through some turnover problems. And it's weird because you're standing in a store and the lights go off. It's just, it's like bizarre. And you walk outside and all the lights are off and you're like, oh my God. Yeah. Very bizarre.
Yeah. I've lived through a couple of blackouts during extreme heat. And it's like the real deal. I mean, yeah, it's hot and scary. So that's my
that's our future. That's our future, hot and scary.
It is.
But let's get the plug in here, shall we, for a certain podcast that a certain co-host of this program is doing right now?
Oh, heck yeah.
Get the plug in, Amy Scott.
Let's do it.
Get the plug in. Come on. Seriously.
All right, so I've been reporting on the future of climate change and actually housing. We're looking at sea level rise and what that means for South Florida and Miami in particular. We're launching in October. Check us out.
It's probably like embargoed or something. I'm breaking some huge hush-hush top secret marketplace embargo.
Yeah, I'll have to make sure Caitlin
nobody's
cool
listening.
With it.
The hell with them. Nobody's listening. All right,
we
Jake, hit that button. Save me from myself. That's right. That's right. I've never understood that. Ooh, we can't tell anybody. All right, I went first with the news. You go first with the smiles. Go.
Okay. This one really does make me smile. I don't know if you're a Joni Mitchell fan, Kai. I won't put you on the spot,
I'm
but
not,
I am.
But this one was cool. I'm not, but this one was cool.
Yeah. So Joni Mitchell, for those who don't know, Canadian-American singer-songwriter, just an amazing musician with a totally unique voice, total hero of mine. She made a surprise appearance last night at the Newport Folk Festival. She hadn't had a public concert, like a full-length show, in almost 20 years. She's been pretty sick. She had a brain aneurysm rupture in 2015 and hasn't really been performing. But apparently her friend, the singer Brandi Carlile, sort of orchestrated this appearance. I saw a picture of the set list on NPR's website. If you all are fans, you'll recognize these songs. She played Carrie, Help Me, Case of You, Big Yellow Taxi. She sat in this big ornate chair that looked like a throne, which seems kind of appropriate. And, you know, it was just cool. I think I would have just about died if I had been there.
Can you imagine, right?
No. Yeah. So cool. Yeah, I would have been like one of those teenagers screaming at a Beatles concert. So it's probably a good thing I wasn't there.
All right. So mine is over the weekend, the trailer, actually, technically, I think it's a teaser, right? It's not actually the trailer. Mm. There's some movie
nomenclature thing going on. I don't even know the difference.
Me neither, but somebody out there can tell us. The teaser for the next Black Panther movie dropped. It's been the subject of much speculation, right? What they're going to do with the role of T'Challa, because Chadwick Boseman, of course, passed away a couple of years ago. He had the title role in the first one, and it was awesome. And now the teaser is out. I will tell you, it was cool to see the teaser. I'm not wild about how they did it, because it was a little too teasy. It was a little too teasy. I know that they're trying to build it up, but I need a little more meat on those bones. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. But we'll put it on
the
show
page. But you know when you see a trailer and you feel like you've seen the whole movie, and why even bother?
Well, that's true.
So I guess I'm cool with less as opposed to too much.
That's fair. That's fair. It's Black Panther 2 Wakanda Forever. Coming out in like November, I think. So stay tuned for that one. We'll put the trailer on the homepage. The teaser, I guess.
Yeah, I'll have to check it out.
There we go. And on a Monday, I believe that's a reasonably expeditious 13 minutes of this podcast. Sam Fields is in the co-host chair tomorrow. Amy's off reporting for her podcast, How We Survive. Sam and I are going to do some other potential ways to get inflation under control without the Federal Reserve. I'm interested to see how that one goes. I know, right? And
yeah,
also, oh, by the by, I know, right? Next week, just so we're all on the same page, next week, this podcast is going to be on summer break because we all need a vacation. No new episodes is what that means.
Yeah, everybody needs a vacation. In the meantime, send us your questions and comments. You can send us an email to makemesmart@marketplace.org, or you can call, leave a voice message. It's 508-UB-SMART. This is me. Make Me Smart is produced by Marissa Cabrera. Today's program was engineered by Jake Cherry.
Bridget Bondner is in charge. Donna Tam is actually in charge. They are getting shorter, though, these credits. I wonder what's going on. Don't mind me. I'm just a talent. It's easiest that way. Know your place. Boom.
all over the country.
We need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.